You are listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production.
Bonus. Something extra that is good. B-O-N-U-S. Bonus.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into another episode of Two Peas. I'm very excited about this one. The topic is cool. You know, we try to obviously do cool topics whenever we do these top fives. But this one is especially cool because I got my boy on from Australia, and he hasn't been on in quite a while. Paul, you'll have to remind me. But let's say what's up to Paul from The Countdown. What's up, man?
Oh, not a whole hell of a lot, Gerald. It's a pleasure to be back. It's new year, 2019. It's great to speak to you. It's great to speak to your listeners, your loyal peas. So, good times.
That's right, man. Of which you are one, and I'm very appreciative of that. I just want to, you know, this episode's not going to air for a few weeks, but I want to go ahead and get it out there publicly that just a giant congratulations, man. I know you and Wayne just hit 200 episodes officially.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's really kind of you. Yeah, we did. We crossed that barrier. It's a nice moment. It's something we never thought we would achieve. And yeah, it was a moment of specialness when we were recording the 200th over the weekend, just gone. So
I got a little anecdote for you, Paul, that I haven't told you yet. Okay. So,
okay.
You know, I'll tell all of my listeners as if there's somebody that's listening to me that hasn't listened to your show, but just in case. So for the 200th episode, Paul sought out his listeners' best movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously you and Wayne typically do your own list for whatever the topic is, but this time around you guys had nothing to do with it. It was your listeners' kind of cumulative score that you gave films that they named as their best movies of all time.
Well,
when you and I first kind of met and you came on the show, I don't know if you recall this is probably a little over a year ago now, you told me that if you ever ended the show with Wayne, you would do your best movies of all time.
Yes, we would do ours.
You remember telling me that. So you started asking online for feedback for the best movies of all time. And I got to tell you, I was actually sitting in a movie theater when I saw your post for that initially. I don't remember what I was going to see at the time, but this was probably a month or so ago. And I saw that and I'm like, this can't be happening. They're ending the show. And then I watched the movie, you know, but I did have that rush over me, like, man, one of my favorite shows is ending. This is bullshit. And then, of course, I found out that it's not actually ending right now. You're just getting feedback for another reason. But anyway, I just wanted to tell you, it scared me a little.
Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry it scared you, but it's nice to know that the prospect of the show ending would at least touch at least one other person other than myself and Wayne in a meaningful way. So thank you for sharing that. That's really lovely.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I was like, wow, this can't be happening. And then I'm like, never mind. We're good. But hey, guys, I'm going to let him tell you where to find him at the end, and it'll be in the show notes. But make sure you check out Paul and Wayne. They're stationed over in Australia, and they do actually a very similar show to us, but they predominantly count down movies for the most part. Every once in a while, they'll throw TV in there. I know you guys just did your best TV of 2018, which was a great episode as well. Yeah, make sure you check them out. All their information will be in the show notes. Now, what are we doing today, Paul? We're counting down. Why don't you give what you would call this top five? It is...
top five Steven Spielberg characters seems like a good way of describing it to me.
Yeah, you know, we just started doing this new kind of wing of the show where I want to focus on directors and, you know, some of my favorite directors and some guests' favorite directors. And we just did Tim Burton, which hasn't aired yet, but then we just did Tim Burton with Jeff from Cadavercast, which was a lot of fun. But basically, it's just, you know, characters that appeared in a Spielberg film, and we decided to go with films that only he directed. Correct, Paul?
That is it. Yep, just the direction only.
Yeah, you know, and since we're talking about Tim Burton, you know, it kind of came up a little bit where it's like, okay, but Batman's not a, quote, Tim Burton character. But no, but he was in a Tim Burton movie. So we'll take the same kind of, you know, if you want to say angle. with Spielberg characters as well. So whether he created it himself or not, if it was in one of his films, he or she or it was in one of his films, then it is fair game.
Mm-hmm.
So eligible. How you feel, man? I mean, how do you feel coming up with this list? You know, I sent you a few filmmakers to have you on for this segment, and you jumped on Spielberg pretty much right away. So when you were doing your research, I mean, how do you feel? Was it easy to kind of come up with this top five?
It was in one sense, and that is that probably there wasn't 20 to choose from. I was probably straight the way down to six or seven. Four of them automatically made the list. The last one had to vie a little bit, so I wasn't inundated with choice. I wasn't spoilt for it. And that's not an indictment on Steven Spielberg as a director. It's more that most of his films are, most of them, probably less about the characters than they are about the stories or the adventure overall. So that's it. There are some absolute standout ones as we're about to discuss today, I'm sure.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, I was telling you before we started recording, but I was a little surprised because Steven Spielberg is obviously a marquee director name. I mean, that's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, of the last 30 years. So I was a little surprised, to be honest, that, I don't know, my pool was smaller than I thought it was going to be. I thought I was going to go on IMDb or Google and have like 50 characters, but I really only had about 7 or 8 initially. And then I dug a little bit deeper because I started doing this thing where I just basically round out my top 10 for my honorable mentions. So I do have 10 here that, you know, I think are really cool and I think that deserve to be on a list if you're talking about Spielberg characters. But I did find it funny that, and ironic that probably the largest director name in history was a little shallow in the character pool. I don't know. It was just strange to me. I didn't expect that.
Yeah, like you said, Tarantino has been taken. He would have been who I jumped on straight away. And I think you probably have a much harder time, if you haven't recorded that one already, you will have a much harder time doing that one because there's so many over-the-top, colorful characters in Tarantino's world. But like I say, Steven Spielberg, he has different strengths. He brings something different to the screen.
Well, you can put your fist up to the moon right now because Nick from Epic Film Guys jumped on that one. So,
oh, son of a bitch.
But I'll be sure to hopefully get your feedback for that when we record it.
Yes, and I will more than happily submit it and tell Nick how wrong he is.
I can't wait to see how wrong he is. That's why I just love having him on. I'm like, what are you talking about? All right, man. I tell you what. So let's count down our top five Steven Spielberg characters. Again, any character from a Spielberg film is fair game. You want to go first, Paul? You want to start us off with your number five, man?
More than happy to. All right. Well, my number five is from, and here's, okay, I'm going to say straight off the bat. I wonder if you have any Steven Spielberg character from the last 15 years in your list. Because, spoiler, I don't. And the first of mine comes from way back in 1993 in his Best Picture award-winning film, Schindler's List. I am, of course, going for a man who began as a Nazi and ended as a hero who gave up virtually everything to save some 1,200 Jewish people, and that's Oskar Schindler, as played by Liam Neeson.
Yeah, powerful film, man. I mean, go ahead. You know what? I gotta come clean a little bit. I saw this movie initially in the 90s. And I haven't watched it since. I mean, it was just such an emotionally draining.
Exactly.
I'm not saying I didn't like it. I'm just saying, you know, you don't really sit down and watch Schindler's List. At least I don't. I know a lot of people love it though. But go ahead. I mean, why did you go with this?
3 hours of watching a people be systematically destroyed and treated like less than animals is pretty hard watch. But in amongst all of that, Liam Neeson, sort of a relatively unknown. He'd obviously been around for quite some time. I think going all the way back to Krull. 1983, I want to say. Could even be far back in 1981, I'm not sure. But he was coming off, I think Spielberg saw him on some play or in some film and said, I want this guy because his star power is not going to overshadow the role and the man. This is a film about an unknown man stepping up to the plate, showing more courage in the last couple of years of the war than virtually anybody else will show in their lives. And I found that wholly inspirational in amongst this bleak depravity of the Nazi regime and how they treated the poor Jewish people and a lot of other people alongside them.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. Didn't they re-release this in theaters recently? I feel like
25th anniversary, I'd say last year sometime.
Yeah, you know what? I actually thought really hard about going to see them, but it was just such a hard watch, man. I mean, it's a great film. It deserves all the awards and recognition that it's received. I don't know. What do you say, man? You say this is Spielberg's best job as a director?
That's a really big call to make. I mean, it won Best Picture.
Right.
I think I can't remember if he won Best Director, though. So there's a fail on the Oscar quiz trivia knowledge front.
Right. I just remember it was so, you know, inundated with awards and nominations and that kind of thing, where Spielberg's not typically in that conversation because he creates a lot of action and, you know what I mean?
People pleasers. Yeah. I mean, it was, there's another one of his films on my list that maybe not quite as hard hitting as this, one of the characters from that, but he has the capacity to dig deep and go very emotional and really draw out something from not just his actors, but the audience as well.
Right, right. Great film, man. I just haven't revisited it in 20 years. I need to, but it's a great film. So Oscar Schindler is number five for Paul. So my number five is interesting that you brought it up because my number five is pretty recent. I was actually looking up the year. I know. Okay. I was actually looking up the year when you said that, though, and it's not quite the 15-year cutoff. It's about 17 years old.
Okay. All right.
The film came out in 2002. It was portrayed in this, it's a real life person. So it was a biopic, which I've also spoke about on the show before, but Leonardo DiCaprio portraying Frank Abagnale Jr. The film is obviously Catch Me If You Can.
Welcome to Miami Mutual Bank. How may I help you?
I'd like to cash this check here and I'd like to take you out for a steak dinner.
Are you a real life pilot?
I sure am, little lady.
The jump seat is open.
It's been a while since I've done this. Which one's the jump seat again?
Dr. Connors to the ER. Dr. Connors to the ER.
This is irrefutable evidence that the defendant is lying.
Special Agent Hanratty, FBI.
Hello, Carl.
You're gonna get caught. It's like Vegas. The house always wins.
Some nuts flying around the country posing as a pilot.
Call him the James Bond of the sky.
Hello, pusher.
This is by far the best date I have ever been on.
I absolutely love this movie. I mean, it's got to be in my top 25 maybe of all time. I love it. It's probably as far as a 2-hour picture and just rewatchability, this might be my favorite Spielberg film. I feel like I could watch this. Yeah, I feel like I could watch this. I know.
Get
I just feel like
takes here on 2P.
I know. I just want to be honest, though. You know what I mean? I feel like I could watch this literally anytime. Like I could watch this weekly if it was on, which often it is. It'll show up here in the States on, you know, TBS or TNT. I'm not sure if you guys have those channels out there, but
no, we don't.
Yeah, it's on all the time, man. And I own the Blu-ray, and I just love this movie. It's got the feeling of kind of like a heist flick, so it's got that fun kind of vibe. You know, DiCaprio is amazing in it. Tom Hanks is amazing in it. I want to say Amy Adams is in there. It's a great film, man. I you like Catch Me If You Can, obviously, right?
Well,
I mean, if you don't, it's
honest,
okay.
You're honest with your I haven't seen this film since it first came out at the cinema, and I was okay with it, but I wasn't as blown away as everybody else, and I've never returned to it. So
really?
I don't feel like I'm in a position to offer real accurate comment.
Wow. Paul, God. I'm glad I love you so much, man. I wonder if Nick hates this one too. Get him on too. Get both of you guys on.
I reckon he loves this one. I don't hate it. I just was a bit underwhelmed when I first watched it. But I have a slowly forming list through my podcast and some of the guest appearances and some of the guests we have on of films I may have been given short thrift to that I need to go back and review again. And I'm in this big film challenge this year to watch as many films as possible. So this is the year to do it. So I'll add this one to the list for you, Gerald.
That's yeah, please, I like man. It. I mean, I love it, man. I mean, I watch this probably 2 or 3 times a year. Love this movie. It's just a lot of fun and it's informative because it's a real historical person, historical events that happened in the movie. I love that. I don't know if you listened, but we did a biopics episode recently and I talked about how I love when a film production, you know, like a Spielberg film, not necessarily, I'm not talking about a documentary, so I mean, you know, like a feature film, when it introduces me to someone in history that I didn't know about before. And that's what Catch Me If You Can did. I mean, Frank Abagnale is a fascinating person and what he did and what he was able to do as a young teenager.
Yeah, no doubt.
And live his life like that kind of just like a ghost, you know, kind of going in and out through the different scenarios in his life. And he did that for so long. And now fast forward ahead, he was so good at it that now he works for the FBI to catch other people doing what he did. So, you know, it's just a fascinating story. DiCaprio just absolutely nailed it in this role. I can't remember if he was nominated for this one or not, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was. He's one of my favorite actors. And then you have the beloved Tom Hanks in there too. So you can't really go wrong with that. I just feel like Spielberg, Hanks, and DiCaprio, you're good. You're all set. So great catchy soundtrack. It's a period piece. Takes place in the 60s, which is a lot of fun. So, yeah, man, Frank Abagnale by DiCaprio is my number five. And you're up, man. What's your number four?
My number four, I did see on at least one of the listeners' feedback lists, and so some people might consider this a little low, but here's another one of Steven Spielberg's films, which I don't rate as highly as most, even though I appreciate it just fine, except for how over the top some of the acting is. And that is the original and obviously best Jurassic Park film. And my fourth favorite Steven Spielberg character is Jeff Goldblum's Ian Malcolm.
Awesome, man. You know what? I was concerned we were going to have a lot of crossover. He's my number six. So he just missed my list. He's in my honorable mentions.
All right. Well, I don't feel so bad anymore because at least he's on my list.
Yeah. No. Go ahead. What's your spiel, man? Why do you love him? I mean, awesome character.
It's Jeff Goldblum, right? And even to this day, Jeff Goldblum can pop up in Thor Ragnarok or The Ilk and sort of own his time on screen. Mm-hmm. And back in this is maybe just around prime Goldblum time. So anytime he was on screen and the way he speaks and his mannerisms, and obviously he's super fucking intelligent and he always communicating chaos theory to the audience and life finds a way.
How do you know they're all female? Has somebody go out in the park and pull up the dinosaur skirts?
We control their chromosomes. It's really not that difficult. Yeah. All vertebrate embryos are inherently female anyway. They just require an extra hormone given at the right developmental stage to make them male. We simply deny them that.
Deny them that?
John, the kind of control you're attempting is, it's not possible. Listen, if there's one thing the history of evolution has taught us, it's that life will not be contained. Life breaks free, it expands to new territories, and it crashes through barriers painfully, maybe even dangerously, but, well, there it is.
There it is.
You're implying that a group composed entirely of female animals will breed?
No, I'm simply saying that life finds a way.
It's just...
Have you ever watched him? I'm sure you have, but have you ever seen him on interviews, like late night talk shows and stuff?
Oh, I probably have, but not his. I can bring to mind.
I beg you to go on YouTube and just look up literally any Jeff Goldblum TV appearance, like Conan O'Brien, Letterman. Like when he goes on, it's almost like he's in character when he's talking to the host, and it's just the best, man. He is so charismatic. He's a musician. Did you know that? He's like a...
Yeah, I did. And I do know from our good friends, Justin and Chrissy over on So I Made a Movie Geek, that they have met the Goldblum, and the Goldblum very sly in coming up and having a few pleasant words to say to Chrissy. So,
well, that's good to know. Well, I'm sure Justin was like, sure, man. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Justin was more than happy for whatever was going to happen because it was Jeff Goldblum.
Me too. I'd be like, no problem, honey.
Yeah, but his character in it is great, and the fact that he lives and he's the major character arguably in the second film as well, which he's probably the best thing about the second film as much as it became just a cheap King Kong knockoff. So it was great to see him back. If any reason I'm dark on him, and you know he's obviously charming and wily ways, it's because they teased him in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom and then barely showed anything of him, you know, just sort of the snippet at the start, the snippet at the end. It's like, how dare you tease us with the Malcolm in this particular film series? It's another reason to hate that movie.
Yeah, that's one of those characters you can't, if you're going to promise us him, we got to see him, you know what I mean?
Like, front and center?
Yeah, it'd be like showing, you know, Vader in a Star Wars trailer and then he's not in it, you know, like, what the hell?
Virtually.
Yeah. Okay, hey, great pick, man. I mean, like I said, it just missed my list. I wanted to give some love to Catch Me If You Can, so I didn't anticipate you having that one, which sounds like you definitely won't. So I wanted to give a little love to that one, so I'm glad I did. But yeah, great character, man. Jeff Goldblum is an absolute fucking treasure, so no argument there. Okay, my number four is the first of two that was not portrayed by a human.
Oh,
all right. Okay. And this is... And I'll talk a little bit about it after I give the pick, but it is basically Jaws, the shark from Jaws, 1975, is my number four.
Of all the people in the world, I should have had this on my list, and I don't. So I'm now going to do an emergency reshuffle around, and that's my number six. Well done, Jared.
I'm glad I could influence you there. Yeah, you know, I mean, It's so funny. Actually, before I knew we were going to be doing this list, I watched it. We did, you know, you remember our friends, the Epic Film Guys, do the horror challenge every October.
Sure thing.
So I watched this just a few months ago, and it had been the first time I'd seen it in a couple years. And I mean, it doesn't hold up, let's be honest. You know, it's, from an effect standpoint. I mean, right? I mean,
sure. Yeah. But I still think it is the quintessential film, which changed sure. the way, not just summer tentpoles, but changed the way that monster films were going to be made for the next 45 years. Sure. That is to say, let's only show it when we have to because it's not working well enough.
Oh, no, I love that part. No, I love
and
that
I think,
part.
I mean, when you do see it, it mostly looks pretty good, when it's chomping down on Quint.
You think so? I don't. I mean, when's the last time? When's the last time you put eyes on this?
2 or 3 years ago.
You know, I was I don't know. I disagree with you. I disagree with you. Not on 4K. Oh my God!
No, it's not out on 4K here yet.
Oh, okay, good. I was gonna say, what's wrong with you? I mean, I disagree with you to a certain extent from the just, and I'm not talking about the overall aura of the film. That works. You know, the very minimalistic way that the shark kind of terrorizes people in the water, and you only see the fin and you only see the waves, and the music is obviously key, right? I mean, the music is iconic and historic
for sure.
So the film works. That I didn't mean the film itself doesn't hold up. I just meant more so the effects of the actual shark. You can definitely tell it's fake. Now, with that being said, I don't care, because I put myself back I put myself back to when I saw it initially, because, you know, when I was 10 or 12 years old, when I originally saw this, I mean, you're scared. You don't want to go to the beach for years after seeing this. And, you know, the premise is a little like, okay, you know, because there's shark attacks all the time. But you have to take your place out of 2019 and put yourself in the 70s and 80s when this was a big, big deal cinematically. And it does hold up in that respect. I just meant more so the actual mechanical shark. If you're watching
childhood eyes.
Me too. So, and you have to. But like you said already, and you said it for me, I mean, when Jaws came along in 1975, every creature feature that came after that, every on-screen monster, anything owes a debt of gratitude to Jaws, and it was done. It was done in a way that it was really revolutionary, and you can still see the impact of Jaws today with pieces of shit like The Meg that just came out. And,
oh God!
You know, I mean, every couple of years there's a shark attack movie, right? And
they're all awful.
And except, then, yeah, unfortunately,
except Deep Blue Sea.
I was gonna say Deep Blue Sea was okay. I agree with that. Deep Blue Sea was okay. But, you know, they just can't get it right, man, because it was done so, so well out of the gate. I mean, there's no way you're going to be able to top what Spielberg did with Jaws. And that, you know, that shark, I mean, even if we're just talking about movie posters, I mean, the picture of the shark coming up out of the water with her swimming on the movie poster is an iconic image. I mean, everybody knows who that is, whether you were born in the 70s or whether you were born 5 years ago. You know who that is or what that is.
Yes.
So Jaws, Bruce the Shark, Jaws, 1975 is my number four, man. Well, over to you, brother.
Great pick, even with the backhanded compliment in there. Look, two things. One, I have confirmed that Steven Spielberg did win Best Director for Schindler's List in 1993. And two, pretty much Jaws doesn't scare many Aussies, because that's what we live every damn day in this country. So,
yeah,
slight exaggeration, but yes.
Well, you're surrounded by water and surfers and everything else. Yep. So,
or as the sharks call them, lunch.
They're living the dream out there, brother.
Yeah. All right. Well, my number three then is sticking with Jaws, and I warred over which character to put in here. As I said, never really considered Jaws, and I ended up landing on what probably most people would consider to be the most surprising of the three main characters. I went with Police Chief Brody himself, Roy Schneider.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. Quint and Hooper are larger than life, amazing characters. Quint in particular is just... he's a character to be remembered forever. He would be now my number seven on my list. But
yeah, Quint's on my honorable mentions. Quint's. I didn't want to put Quint and Jaws on my list, so Quint's in my honorable mentions.
I've only got one character from each film as well. I wanted to make sure I honored at least five of Spielberg's films. And Hooper is this likable, fast talking city slicker dude. And in the middle, the calm between these two guys, Storm, there is Brody, who is, if you'll remember, frightened of the water.
Mm-hmm.
He lives on an island, and he polices the island, and he's putting himself in harm's way to get this shark and stop any more of the people he's responsible for being killed, despite having to go up against the mayor and his idiotic $8 before people's lives sort of mentality. So I just thought he plays it so well, Schneider. He plays it so well, Rob Schneider. That's who was in the Star.
Wait a minute, what?
That's great.
Holy shit, I didn't know they did a remake of this.
Sorry. Yes, Roy Schneider does it so well, you totally buy into it. Just his little moments. The moment he has with his son, when his son's copying him, when he's reading the books about sharks, and he gradually becomes aware of this and then starts mimicking him, setting him up for him to be mimicked. It's just, that's a magic moment as well. All the way through to, of course, the famous line where, smile, you son of a boo.
Smile, you son of a bitch.
It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love the man, love the character. Yeah, obviously he got written out eventually when Roy said, enough's enough, I'm not coming back anymore. But in this film, he is the absolute bomb.
Yeah, I agree, man. I was kind of, you know, like I said, Quint's on my honorable mentions, and then obviously Jaws is in my top five. So I didn't include anybody else from that film franchise. But I don't know. I'm surprised by the Brody pick. I think it's a good pick. It makes sense, especially after your dialogue. But I don't know. I would have thought you would have went Quint. But.
Yep, and that was the temptation. And I went, hang on, who do I really, when I watch that film, who am I really watching it for? Who am I really journeying with? And it's Brody.
Right. That's awesome, man. All right, so I like it. And like I said, I just watched this a few months ago, and it's fresh in my mind. So that's a good pick, man. And
nice.
And,
thank you.
And Roy did a great job, too. I mean, he was really, like you said, he kind of had to go against the grain because he was afraid to go into water. I mean, in that first attack scene where they're all, not the first one, but I think it was the second one, where they're all on the beach, and, you know, he's telling everybody to get in the water. He just stands right on the edge, you know, just like right in the wake of it, you know, get everybody in. But he won't go in the water. Nice. Save him. He's like, fuck this. You guys need to get inside here. So a great pick, man. I like it. So Brody's your number three. Let's see, man. All right. I think you might use your infamous low on this one. I don't know. I did put it at number three, though. So I will say this is probably my second favorite Spielberg movie, right behind your favorite, Catch Me If You Can. So so from a movie standpoint, this would be my second favorite Spielberg. And I haven't made that list. I'm just doing it off the top of my head. I think this is probably my second favorite of his. But it is Captain Miller from Saving Private Ryan, portrayed by Tom Hanks.
Ryan, I don't know anything about Ryan. I don't care. Man means nothing to me. It's just a name. But if, you know, if going to Rommel and finding him so he can go home, if that earns me the right to get back to my wife, well, then that's my mission. You want to leave? You want to go off and fight the war? All right, I won't stop you. I'll even put in the paperwork. I just know that every man I kill, the farther away from home I feel.
Slightly low. In fact, that's my number two. So
okay,
we're almost in sync there.
Awesome. Yeah. So we can have a little back and forth dialogue about it then. I mean, just to get things started, I'll just say that, I mean, Tom Hanks could play anything. I don't care. And I'm talking about me, in my opinion. In my opinion, I absolutely love him. As I'm sitting here right now talking to you, I cannot think of a role that I have not enjoyed him in. Even if the movie was bad, I don't recall me being like, Tom Hanks sucked in that. Like, he's always great. He's always kind of magnetic to the viewer. And he can do comedy. He can do drama. He toes the line in all different genres. You know, one of my favorite movies from the 80s is The Money Pit, and it's just a slapstick. Mm-hmm. It's just a slapstick comedy with him and Shelley Long, and it's tremendous. If I was doing, which I probably will someday, if I was doing top five Tom Hanks movies, it would be such a just like a diverse group. I mean, there would be so many different types of movies on there. Yeah. And this is obviously a war epic. I've been told it's the 7th best war movie of all time. Oh,
don't start.
So, you know, it's got a little notoriety over in Australia, I guess. But I love it, man. I mean, you know, Captain Miller is kind of the foundation of this film. There's a lot of great characters in this movie. Tom Sizemore is awesome. Matt Damon, obviously. You know, there's a lot of great kind of characters that exist throughout the course of this movie. But Captain Miller's there really from beginning to end, and he kind of is the center of the film, and his sensibilities kind of take you through that movie. It's heavy. It's a heavy film at times.
For sure.
And, you know, it has a little bit of comedy in there with some of the banter with the guys. You know, it's got a little bit of a Band of Brothers vibe, which I know came after it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just a great war movie, man. It's got to be, and I'm not, I know it was in jest earlier, but it's got to be my favorite wartime movie of all time. I mean, I love it.
That's better.
Yeah. So that's my number three, Captain Miller. And you said that's your number two. So why do you love it, man?
For everything you said, Tom Hanks is amazing in the film. And he is the center. He is the center point character. So much so that I don't know if you remember back the first time you watched this movie, but I was sure that the old man at the start, who's at the veterans cemetery, was him. And I think it's just very simply done by having it close in on his eyes, one shot of the, from what I remember, of Normandy, and then Captain Miller looks up and we're straight away in his perspective. So the whole film, mm-hmm. I watched this thinking he is the guy at the end who's going to be reflecting back on this. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's not the way it turns out. And I don't think we can be too worried about spoiling a film that's, what, 21 years old now?
No, go ahead.
But basically, of course, he dies and it turns out to be Matt Damon's Private Ryan who we're seeing. And he turns to his wife and says, I hope I've earned it, or I hope it's all been worth it. And she says, of course it has.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such a great misdirection. And I don't know if I was the only person in the world that fell for that, but I was gutted when he died because he was such a good leader from at the very start of the film, and he's the one rushing people up the beach. He steps out in front of to draw the fire of the machine gun nets, and Tom Sizemore's character says to him, I don't think your mother would be very happy to see you doing that, Captain. You know,
right.
So he's prepared to put it all on the line for his men. Then he makes some calls. He lets the guy go, the German soldier go, and the guy who's played by Ed Burns, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, he's going to abandon them. He said, I'm out of here, basically mutinying or going AWOL. And it's at that point that Miller says, well, I know you've got a pull on me, and I'm a teacher. And it's just the perfect moment. It's so well played by Hanks. And if you didn't and you weren't already in love with Captain Miller, you were at that point. So when he dies in that great scene at the end of the film, almost as good as the opening battle scene, it's heart-wrenching. And that's why he's so high on my list, because he's awesome.
Yeah, I agree, man. And I just looked it up just to make sure I didn't misspeak, but he was nominated for Best Actor for that one. Tom Hanks was.
There you go.
I'm not sure who won. It just says he was a nominee. And then Spielberg won Best Director that year for that.
Again, for the second time.
Yeah, for the second one. So,
and one of the great, and this is when Shakespeare in Love beat out. Is that right? No, I mix something else ridiculous beat out Best Saving Private Ryan for Best Picture. Something I'm still dark about to this day.
Shakespeare in Love was 97, so it wasn't that one. But so Captain Miller, we matched up there for the first time. Surprisingly, it was my number three, and it was your number two. So I'm going to go ahead and give you my number two. So my number two is the second character on my list that is not portrayed by a human. It is E.T. from E.T. the Extraterrestrial from 1982.
Yeah,
what's that?
As soon as you said you had two non-humans on your list, I knew which one.
A little bit of a spoiler alert there. But yeah, I mean, this is my childhood, really. I mean, this is a nostalgia pick for more than anything else. I just showed this to my five-year-old son for the first time a few months ago, and he loved it so much that we were redoing his bedroom, and it had been a while since we watched it. And we were redoing his bedroom, and I said, all right, man, you got a big wall here. You don't have anything on the wall. I'm going to let you pick whatever movie poster you want, and I'm going to frame it for you, and we'll put it on this wall. And he picked E.T. So my son, who's five, picked an 80s movie poster. I mean, how proud could I be? You know, I'm like, oh, he's going to pick, you know, Toy Story or Paw Patrol or something. But he went E.T., so it's on his wall right now. But yeah, I mean, this is a nostalgia pick for me. I saw this when I was like 8 years old for the first time. And VHS tape, watched it incessantly for the next decade of my childhood. You know, there's a lot of other characters, to be honest, that could have been on this list too for me. And like I said, I wanted to limit it to one character per movie. Mm-hmm. But E.T. is obviously kind of the face of this film, and it's the image that everyone kind of goes to in their mind when they think about E.T. It's a family movie. I named this as one of my top five films to watch with the whole family. It's very exciting. You know, Spielberg was great about taking that kind of recipe from Jaws, where there's a lot of tension and suspense, but making it okay for kids to watch it. And he did that in E.T. You know, because there's scenes where you're on the edge of your seat and you're a little worried about the characters because they are developed so well throughout the movie, but it's not going to, quote, scare you. You know, you're just going to be kind of tense throughout it. So it's a great movie, man. It's got a lot of humor in it, a lot of heart, and it broke me at the end, man. You know, I mean, E.T. was like,
Phone home.
Yeah, you know, you could put any lovable pet or character or friend or family member or, you know, anything like that that you've lost or that's had to move away or any connection that you would have to that alien in the film, and you could connect with it on that level, what those kids were feeling when he had to leave. So I love E.T., man. I mean, obviously iconic too. So it's up there as far as alien, I guess if you want to call it an alien film or a film containing aliens, it's up there too, man. So E.T. from E.T. is my number two.
For sure. I mean, that's a solid pick. And I think, you know, if we're talking about votes among your listeners, then that'll earn quite a few because it's a childhood classic, as you said. I haven't shown my daughter yet. I'm a little bit worried that there's some scenes in it that might be a bit too scary for her, yet I'll let her watch The Goonies, so I don't know what the hell I'm worried about.
Yes, I was going to actually – that's funny you said that because I was actually going to say it's right on par with The Goonies. So if you're okay with that,
yep.
E.T. would be okay. Like I said, Spielberg does a good job because he creates tension. You know, there's a little tension, like, you know, when E.T.'s on the run and with the scientists coming in the house. There's tension. Yeah,
I think it's the scientists coming into the house because at least with The Goonies – it's all taking place away from their house, so there's no intruding into, and that's what I'm worried about, nightmares of someone, the guy in the suit bursting in, like, oh, God, no,
right,
please,
right.
Please.
No, yeah, my son took it okay. I mean, he, to my knowledge, has never had any kind of nightmares related from it, but, I mean, I didn't expect him to enjoy it. I thought he would, you know, 10 minutes into it, he'd be like, all right, this is stupid, but he, you know, he watched the whole thing with me, and he's a fan of it, so we haven't revisited it yet, but he did like it, so.
Very nice. That's a solid pick. Well done, sir.
Did you, before you give your number one, what did you find out on the Oscars?
I was right. Shakespeare in Love did win. Because, of course, the Oscars now are in February, and they're called the 2018 Oscars, 2019 Oscars, but they're referencing 2018 films. So Shakespeare in Love won in 1999 for the 1998 year, beating Saving Private Ryan. And analysts have basically said it's because Harvey Weinstein lobbied so hard and spent so much money, he just basically bought himself and the film the award.
Well, that worked out well for everyone in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, I don't think
take it away after all his crimes. But anyway.
Yeah. What a travesty. And it's funny. I don't even hate Shakespeare in Love. It's just like not anywhere close to Saving Private Ryan.
Exactly.
Whatever. And they're actually doing that again this year, I fear. In my opinion, there's only two Oscar nominees for 2018's year that should be nominated.
That should be nominated or are nominated?
Two that should be. Six of the eight, I'm like, why did you nominate these movies?
So what do you reckon's going to win? Or are you doing that in another show before?
No, we're not doing that. My prediction is Roma. I think the Academy just is in love with that movie. And it's
I'll tell you why.
Everyone.
I don't think it will. And that's because it's been nominated in Best Foreign Film as well.
Yeah.
And I can't see them giving it to Best Foreign Film and the Best Picture at the same time. And how can you give the Best Picture overall and then not give it the Best Foreign Film as well?
Yeah, I mean, of the nominees, I would only be satisfied with A Star Is Born or The Favorite. So Black Klansman would be a third for me, but I don't see that winning either. I don't know, man. Black Panther just took the Screen Actors Guild.
It won Best Picture at Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah, well, Screen Actors Guild does this thing where they do ensemble cast as opposed to film.
Oh, okay, right. Yep. So one Best Ensemble. Right.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. I mean, I really don't know, to be honest. If I was predicting, though, I would predict Roma just because they're so in love with that movie the last few months. But I don't want it to win. I'll tell you that. But
yeah, it's wide open this year. I think it's a lot harder this year to pick than the last year or two, I would say. So we'll give it a lot of thought next couple of weeks.
We'll see. I'm sure Nick will be thrilled when Bohemian Rhapsody walks away with it. So,
oh no.
I actually enjoyed Bohemian. It does not deserve to be, please let me come out and say right now, it does not deserve to be nominated for Best Picture for the Academy Awards. I am not on board with that, but I did enjoy the movie. I thought it was an enjoyable film.
It's okay. I didn't hate it the way Nick hates it, and some people hate it, but it's not a good film, and it's not a good biopic of Queen.
No, and it's Bryan Singer, man. Come on. Get away from that, you know? Yep. All right, man. Sorry, we got off on a little tangent there. What's your number one Steven Spielberg character, buddy?
Easy. And if it's not your number one now, Gerald, having heard your other four, then we're going to have a very serious talking to wrap up this particular episode because it was number one instantaneously. You use the graphic in your social media plugs for this episode. It's the character that everybody thinks about when they think about, Steven Spielberg and his most iconic characters. It is Harrison Ford as Dr. Indiana Jones in Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom, and Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And I really look forward to the fourth movie that they're making coming out 2021.
Indiana Jones. Indiana Jones. I didn't think about that. I'm just kidding. That's also my number one. Yeah, man. I mean, you know, what can we say? I mean, Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones, just an absolutely iconic character. I mean, up there with, actually, since we're on the subject, what would you say is more iconic, Indiana Jones or Han Solo?
I don't think I want to make a decision what's more iconic. I can tell you who I like better, and that's Indiana Jones.
Really? Hands down. Yeah. Harrison Ford's great, though, right? I mean, he kills both of those. And what I was going to say is those both are just so iconic. I mean, really, anything that comes out of the Star Wars universe ends up pretty much being iconic. But, I mean, he embodied Han Solo, did a great job as the adventurer and as Indiana Jones. Are you Raiders of the Lost? I know Raiders of the Lost Ark made your fans top 20, if I'm not mistaken. Spot I want to on. Say it was like 6 or 7, right, or something like that.
Yeah, it was definitely top 10. So it's right up there.
Are you Raiders of the Lost Ark guy, or are you Temple of Doom with winners over there? What do you think?
No, Raiders Lost Ark a million times over, but the one that challenges it for me is Last Crusade. I think that film is just about as good, and on a good day, it might even be better for me. So, yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't expect that. I didn't know that. The trilogy is amazing. I mean, those three back to back are just awesome. I love Temple of Doom, and Raiders of the Lost Ark probably tied for me. And I do like Last Crusade a lot too. These are also movies that I haven't revisited in quite a few years. But when you're talking about Spielberg characters, I mean, there's nothing more iconic than Harrison Ford in the hat with the whip. Right? I mean, there's nothing.
You beat
else.
Me to it. I was gonna say, what's more iconic?
Yeah,
his hat, his whip, his leather jacket. You know, which is it? Take your pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a whole thing he's got going, man, and it's gonna live on in cinematic folklore forever, brother. Indiana Jones, we matched up on our number one there, man. What do you want to say about Indiana Jones? I don't want to cut you off.
No, I think you've done a very good job, and like I said, you could just pick, it's his swagger, it's his attitude, it's how he can be, by day, this very buttoned-down, respectable academic, and by the rest of his life, just be the all-time coolest dude who, you know, everybody wants a piece of Indiana Jones, you know, either to get into bed with him or to be an element of him. He is just perfect, and as you said, Harrison Ford has that charm, has that ego just in the perfect measure. So he's not too arrogant and smarmy that you hate his guts and think, oh, can he have a fall? And neither do you ever doubt that he's going to succeed in whatever scenario he gets into. And that's what makes him so much fun.
Yeah, I agree, man. Awesome. Well, I'm glad we matched up there. I feel better. Yes, I feel good. We had two crossovers. That's not too bad, actually. Yeah. I thought we were going to have like 4 or 5, to be honest, because like I said, my pool was a little shallow in terms of characters when I started, you know, diving into it. So what I started doing, Paul, is I started rounding out my top 10 with my honorable mentions, a couple of which have already been mentioned. Do you have any honorable mentions you want to shout out that didn't quite make your top 5?
Just the ones that I've mentioned so far. So as I said, I'm shoehorning Jaws in now because that's a great call. I would have also Quint and Hooper from Jaws also in that top 10. And then I'd probably turn to Indy's, in my opinion, best companion, and that is Karen Allen as Marion, of course, which mm-hmm. she would be right up there in my favorite characters, just a mm-hmm. you know, alcohol-swilling, tough broad who's able to match it with the men in the movie, and in that kind of film is really saying something.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
That's 9, and I'd probably throw in... Ooh. Yeah, I'd probably go with Tom Sizemore's Sergeant Urquhart, whatever his name is, in Saving Private Ryan, because their 1-2 shtick is just perfect.
Yeah, that's a good one too. He was really memorable in that film for sure. So to round out my top 10, we've already mentioned a couple of them. Ian Malcolm would have been my number 6. Quint mm-hmm. would have been my number 7. And then a couple we did not mention. My number 8 would have been Daniel Day-Lewis's portrayal of Abraham Lincoln would have been my number 8.
I've never seen that movie. Okay.
Oh yeah, it's a ride, man, but it's long. If you remember back to the Schindler's List days, then maybe you'll be okay. It's a little long for me. It's about 3 hours, but Daniel Day-Lewis just gives a clinic in that movie, man. He's obviously one of the best actors of our time, yes. And this is one of his best roles. So him as Lincoln was just perfection. I put the T-Rex from Jurassic Park as my number 9. I know you're going to love that. And I did that really because of the memories I had of seeing it for the first time. I mean, I had seen nothing like that. I mean, you can imagine young kids they're into dinosaurs, first of all, which is kind of weird, but just seeing that on the big screen, chasing the Jeep, which really is like it's chasing you. And it was just like nothing we'd ever seen. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. I mean, it was an updated version of kind of like what we said earlier with Jaws. I mean, it was a little bit better in terms of effects, and it had a little bit, you're just like, wow, this is fucking intense. And especially if you got to see it on the big screen back then. So the T-Rex really kind of scared me and blew me away in Jurassic Park. So that's why it's on there. You can talk shit. You want to go ahead.
No. I realize again, I'm in the minority when it comes to that. And I think that is a very, very iconic character. So I can understand the decision.
It's okay. And then you won't like this one either, but I absolutely love Christopher Walken. One of my favorites in all time, in my opinion. But his portrayal of Frank Abagnale Sr. in Catch Me If You Can.
Okay.
DiCaprio's father mentoring him, knowing that his son's a criminal and kind of not okay with it, but kind of harboring it a little bit and trying to teach him why it's wrong, but letting his son kind of decide on his own that it's wrong, which, of course, he never does until much later. But he realizes his father's wisdom much, much later. But it's a great father-son relationship in that movie between Walken and DiCaprio. Nice. And Walken killed it in that as the dad from Catch Me If You Can. So that would have rounded out my top 10. All right, so Paul.
But hang on, Joe. At any point, does he tell Frank Abagnale Jr. about where he can stick this uncomfortable hunk of metal?
No. But that's also a good one though, right? I mean, he's so memorable.
He is a great actor.
I love him, man. All right, so, you know, we do the suggestion box and we go over to Twitter and sometimes Facebook and see what the fans had to say.
What's in the box? What's in the fucking box?
So I want to touch on a few of those that we may have missed and see what you think. A lot of them did get mentioned. Gidget, we love Gidget. In fact, she's over there in Australia. But she said Indiana Jones. She put up a GIF of him getting chased by the giant rock. So
that's Boulder. Good on her. Nailed it again.
Absolutely. Matt Lewinsky, who I love too, is a frequent contributor to the show. Indiana Jones was his number one. And then he named a few that he included Spielberg as the producer.
Okay.
And we made a conscious effort to not do that. I feel like we would have had a much more eclectic list had we done that. So I'll just list a few that he mentioned here that I thought were kind of cute. Pinky and the Brain, which I didn't even know. I didn't even know Spielberg was a producer on that. Did you?
Me either. No, absolutely.
No, I didn't know that. He's got Doc Brown on here. So yep. Spielberg was the producer for Back to the Future. So obviously those are both amazing. Via VHS has Ian Malcolm's GIF of him lounging with his shirt off. So that's perfect. Now, you know what I'm talking about, right? With Goldblum. Yes. Yeah. That's perfect. So, you know Jeff from CadaverCast. He's been on your show before.
I do. Yes.
And I've known him for a while, but I just had him on finally. We talked about Tim Burton films or Tim Burton characters. It was great. I mean, obviously perfect for him. It was great. So, this is perfect CadaverCast. This is vintage Jeff right here. But he said, how about the creepy truck from Duel?
Duel. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Nice. And you know what? And Jeff, I'll tell him as he's listening, I thought about Duel and I wanted to put Duel on here, but I didn't know if I could sell a truck as a character. But, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, that truck is very ominous throughout the whole film.
Well, you sold Jules as a character, so I wouldn't have thought you had too much trouble.
Yeah, I should. He also said Bruce the Shark, by the way. So he said Bruce the Shark and Duel. Let's see. Richard Dreyfuss from Jaws. Brendan Cassidy said from Incession Hooper. Film of Hooper, of course, yeah. And Hook, portrayed by, who did Hook? Was that Dustin Hoffman did Hook?
Yes,
did
it
Hook?
Was Dustin Hoffman.
And that was that directed by Spielberg?
It was.
Yeah, okay. I couldn't remember if he was just producer on that.
I think it was anyway.
But then Mario in the Bar over on Twitter said, I don't care what anyone says, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom is my favorite, and that is because Short Round is the hero. is the hero. Okie dokie, Dr. Jones. Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
No time for love, Dr. Jones.
That's right.
That's my favorite line from that movie.
That's right. So that was the feedback over on Twitter. Obviously, thank you to everyone that got back to us.
Very nice.
Paul, you just hit 200, man. Big deal, brother. Big deal.
Thank you.
Very thrilled for you guys. I'm going to keep listening for as long as you guys do it. You guys are actually an inspiration for this show. You know, we started, Andy and I, 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago now, and we kind of had to revamp the show about 6 months ago, and we're like, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. And we were doing these bonuses with guests like you, and people love these, you know, as you know, because you're doing it weekly.
Yep.
But you know, it's great, man. It's great fun, man. We throw music in there and TV and whatever we think of to do, but you guys are awesome, and I appreciate what you and Wayne do over there. It's a lot of fun. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, man?
Well, thank you so much, Jill, for the very kind words. And let me just say that I'm a big fan of the new format of the show. I think changing it the way you have has really, really worked well. And I hope that long may you and Andy and your cavalcade of guests continue, because it gives me something extra to listen to every week. And like, if you decide to scrap it or change it again, I'll be also very sad. So don't.
Awesome, man. Awesome, man. I'll take that in consideration.
Yeah, you can find us if you search for the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews. Pretty much on Google, we'll pop up in multiple places. We're on Twitter at the Countdown PC, and we have a Facebook listener community for a little bit like you do for your loyal fans. For anyone who wants to get on board there and communicate with us a bit more directly, you can find it just by searching for the Countdown Facebook listener community on Facebook.
Awesome, man. Paul, you're the best. Wayne, give him my best as well.
I certainly will.
Y'all's show is a blast, and all their information will be in the show notes, guys. Make sure you check them out. Future filmmakers for this type of show that we have on the docket. We've already recorded our Tim Burton characters, which will be out in March, and then upcoming, we're going to be doing our characters from Quentin Tarantino films, which we discussed earlier, and also we have already booked for Christopher Nolan films, so we're going to do that as well. So it'll be a lot of fun, man. I'm looking forward to doing David Fincher. I'd like to find somebody that can do Oliver Stone with me. I'm a fan of a lot of filmmakers. I'm looking forward to it. But this was our Steven Spielberg. Paul, thanks again, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Joe. It's been a blast. Cheers.
Absolutely, man. Take care, guys. We'll see you guys next time. You can't lay low, just like your father. And if I tread upon your feet, you just say so. 'Cause you're the captain, I am no one. I tend to feel as though I owe one. Be no one, and you can carry me away if you want to. You've been listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production. Support and subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/blazingcariboustudios.